When considering the everlasting quest for peace, the real question remains, how much hair metal does one have to endure? Howdy, I'm Jeff Goldsmith, and this is the Q&A. My agenda is simple. Each week, I plan to bring you in-depth insights into the creative process of storytelling. Folks, you know, the answer is unfortunate. It's kind of a lot of hair metal music you have to endure on the quest for peace, at least in the case of Peacemaker on HBO Max. And for today's episode, I am quite pleased to have with me the creator, the director of the pilot and some of the other episodes, and of course, the writer as well, James Gunn. And I love this show. You know, obviously, if for some reason you don't know this, Peacemaker is a TV spinoff from the movie The Suicide Squad, which James Gunn wrote and directed, and it came out in summer of 21. And it's quite great, and it's on HBO Max, and so is the show. It's on HBO Max, and I love the show, and we were able to catch up with James to talk about the season and also the finale, of course. And don't worry, there's a spoiler warning right when you need it if you're not caught up. But as usual, James was very forthcoming about his creative process and what it took to get this TV show in the can. So I know you'll dig this episode. And speaking of things to dig, I hope you also check out Backstory Magazine over at backstory.net. You can read us on a desktop or laptop or via our iPad app, Backstory. And folks, if you've never read us before, I hope you check out our free issue, which you could do in all those places. And if you want to become a subscriber and support independent film journalism, I really hope you do. And to sweeten the deal, you could use coupon code SAVE5. That'll save you $5 off a one-year subscription to Backstory Magazine. Look, it would really mean a lot to me to have my podcast listeners in iTunes and Spotify and my YouTube watchers of the Backstory Magazine YouTube page support my passion project. So thanks for considering. But now, without any further ado, let's jump right into our interview with writer-director James Gunn about Peacemaker Season 1. James, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I absolutely love this show.
Oh, thanks, dude.
Well, I think the place to start is we had interviewed Fred Raskin for Backstory Magazine, and I love Fred, and you guys edit together, and you're both, you know, good old Troma back in the days.
Yeah. So
you guys have that equal footing for gore. And I'm kind of curious, like, at what point in editorial, as you were kind of getting into, needed Peacemaker to stay alive? Because I'm curious if in your original script, you really died in that moment.
Oh, he died. He fully died.
He died. And okay.
It's one of my jokes that I do every time that I see Suicide Squad, which isn't that much anymore. But when I would go and I'd turn to Jen or whoever's sitting next to me and go, no, he's fine. He's okay. It's not a big deal. He's just out in the neck. He's just staring out with his eyes dead eyed. But he's okay. Don't worry about him. Yeah. No, I thought I had killed him, but I fell in love with Peacemaker and I fell in love with John Cena. And so I decided to keep him alive afterwards, you know, and it wasn't too long after Warner Brothers had seen the first cut of Suicide Squad that they came and said, do you want to do a TV series? And if so, who do you want to do it on? Because I think they'll do it on any character that you want to do. And right, I said instantly, Peacemaker.
I want to get a little more into your mindset, because if I'm doing my math right on the calendar, at that time, you guys were jumped into editorial that would have been kind of remote due to the pandemic.
It was, right.
And so, you know, a lot of people didn't know what to do and they were in a state of stasis, right? Just kind of get through the day and figure out what's going on in the world. Some artists were able to create, and you definitely are one of them.
Yeah.
Put us in your creative mind space of being in this uncertain time, not even figuring out how and when your movie's going to come out, and then realizing that because you're not going into editorial every single day, you're not on the commute, you're not, you know, waiting for things, you're at home, that you could use that time to create a show, which is just, it's so wild.
I think that's part of it, but there were a couple of other things. I mean, number one, Suicide Squad came together pretty quickly. So by the time we were done with Suicide Squad, it was mostly edited because we edited the whole way through. And right. It wasn't like anything changed majorly. We didn't go back. We didn't do any reshoots in Suicide Squad. We were happy with it the way it was. So we got through it pretty quickly. So most of my work by that time was really in the visual effects department and overseeing visual effects, which I would do every day online. But I have massive anxiety, and I'm trying to get better with it. But quarantine for me and COVID in general was, like many people who suffer from anxiety, like I do, was miserable. Not to mention all the stuff with the election coming up and all of that. So I was depressed, in actual depression. And my partner, Jen, was probably for the first time in her life sort of depressed and having a difficult time because of the just.
Yeah, the whole world was in a state of shock and depression. And so that makes
sense. I don't have any joy in my life besides work and then getting together with my friends, you know, and having conversations with Jen. So I only had two of those things. I didn't have the other things. So I was really, really miserable. And things felt exceptionally bleak. And where other people may do other things to soothe themselves, whether it's, you know, drinking or, you know, watching TV or whatever, I did the watching TV part, but that doesn't do much for long for me. So it was writing to me that soothes myself and coming up with a story. And during those times, I was completely alive. I was happy while I was writing Peacemaker. And I wrote it to make it into a TV show, but I wrote it first and foremost for me to get out of the hell of my own brain, which I couldn't seem to get out of.
Well, that's great, because that's the best, is when someone could use creativity to kind of battle anxiety. Because, you know, we see the other side of it too, with writers who feel that they can't write.
Yeah.
Because their anxiety is slowing down. So, I mean, I really can commend you on figuring out a way to battle it with creativity, because that's the most beautiful way. And it shows from this show that, like, here's a guy that wanted to not only crack himself up, but make the world laugh too, because this show is so funny. And I think having, you know, the cuffs taken off, that you could just do whatever you wanted in this show, it does not seem like there's limitations. We're not getting into spoilers yet. I'll make a clear announcement when we do. But, you know, there is nudity, there is sex, there is ultra gore.
Yeah.
You didn't have limitations.
I had no limitations. And I think that was one of the, you know, the great things of being in that moment, because I had just done Suicide Squad. I knew that I was happy with how that turned out.
Right.
And I had Guardians 3 coming up. So I had another thing ahead of me. I think normally I get a little bit more afraid of things being successful but Peacemaker to me was extra. Like, it was, this could be a big hit or it could not. I'm not a TV guy. I'm a movie guy. So it could be whatever it was, and that would be okay. And strangely, I think I found myself creatively more than I ever have before in my life. I think that I really enjoyed the process. I enjoyed the process of writing TV. I enjoyed the process of making TV. And I just absolutely loved it. It was wonderful.
Yeah. And it really shows. So, you know, some non-spoiler stuff before we get to the spoilers. How do you arrive at 8 episodes rather than 10, rather than 6? Like, how did it just come out to 8?
Simply because I think that I knew that I needed to shoot the show between Squad and Guardians 3. And that was going to be a big ask anyway. And so doing 8 episodes seemed like the most amount of episodes that I would be able to oversee and take control of.
Okay,
But also, I think that's kind of how long the story seemed to be. It was too big for 6 episodes. The butterfly story especially didn't last for 10 episodes.
That makes sense. You know, you're known for great needle drops and your music's always great. I am a kid of the 80s and I was more on the punk new wave side. So yeah. This show is giving some love to Poison, a band who I and my ilk were all against vehemently, because they were just taking the glam and we felt kind of going a little too popcorn with it. Not as much substance. I would take Love and Rockets over Poison any day. I think they'd kick Poison's ass, but yeah, they wouldn't even be bothered enough to show up to the fight. So I get it. But are you really a heavy metal glam rocker that loves the 80s? I know you get into other heavy metal from Europe and stuff like that in the series as well. But I will say that it fits for who Peacemaker is. So you truly wrote to character.
Yeah, I wrote to character.
You picked the right songs, but tell us your thoughts on that music.
I'm a punk rock kid. Well, listen, it's complicated. I'm complicated, right? I'm a punk rock kid, but I was playing professionally in bands when those bands were playing. So right. I played in alternative bands and you know, sort of very, very heavy punk funk bands. And yet I saw a lot of things I liked in that music because those guys were so successful and I wanted to be successful. And I flirted many times with trying to sell out and do that sort of thing. So, and I looked a lot like those guys because Hanoi Rocks, who he talks about, was right. one of my favorite bands, you know, and they really are the dividing point between punk and rock. And when Henry Rocks came out with Two Steps from the Move, that was I liked Motley Crue. I listened to Motley Crue. That was the first sort of rock or glam metal band, that album. Sure. Because their early stuff is really more punk, even the stuff we play on the show. Yeah, but yeah. that album was the first time I said, I am able to wholeheartedly embrace this sound. I love it. It's great. Because I loved it. At the same time, I loved Aerosmith. I loved Black Sabbath. I liked these other bands a lot. The Rolling Stones. So I loved all music. But yeah, like you, I sort of was, you know, I wasn't, I put down some of those bands a little
bit. When dude, I mean, there was a stack of CDs in I think Annie's apartment when he's stealing stuff. And I saw the Cult right up top of the stack. And I'm like, yes, okay, let's go more towards the Cult and away from some of this other stuff. But, you know, it's okay.
But you know what? If you listen to the Choir Boys, it's not that much different.
No, I know.
It's like those things aren't that much different. It's, you know, I think some of it was the look of those bands.
Yeah.
And that... But I did look like that. So that's to some degree, I looked like Mike Monroe, really. There's a lot of things I liked about it, but you know, the truth is that music has been so divided upon, you know, by devotees of this and devotees of, you know, I mean, people that like different types of music and, oh, I like the Clash, so I can't like Motley Crue or whatever.
No, I know. And music is
so good. And there are so many talented musicians. And yes, I would have never listened to Cinderella back in the day. I didn't like the name. I didn't like the way they looked. But their musicianship is amazing. And so,
I love it.
Well, their musicianship is amazing.
And so here's where I'll meet you in the middle. As a punk kid and new wave kid who would prefer Pixies over any of this from that same time period, it grew on me. It was fun to listen to. It was used perfectly every time, as I would expect from you, sir. So you've brought me a little over to the dark side. Another non-spoiler thing I want to talk about, because I just don't think a lot of people realize it, unless they're, you know, olds. DC Comics was going into, they were experimenting in the 80s and getting into some dark stuff, you know, Watchmen, of course.
Yeah.
And it was the launch of the Vertigo label, which was for more adult stuff. But there was this one character that was hanging around and they didn't know what to do with. And they did a relaunch because he'd appeared in other places. And I'm talking about Vigilante. And what most people don't realize, because Vigilante has been this appropriated character for years. You know, Vigilante's been like a little side character in the Arrowverse, you know, and Flash and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, kids, go seek out the 80s Vigilante. He has no superpowers, right? Just a regular guy. He has taken the law into his own hands. He's tackling serious child trafficking on the level of like Taxi Driver. He is going up against very dangerous drug gangs and he's outnumbered. And then he makes this fatal error that he accidentally kills the wrong person. He just can't deal with it. And he's let a few people die and he can't deal with it. It haunts him. And DC they were being pushed and they kind of said, you know what, we're going to shut down Vigilante. And the writers knew they were going to shut down Vigilante. And they did the most punk rock thing, in which in the last issue, they had this arc in which he is losing and losing and losing. And I'm sitting there reading it like, what's going to happen? How are they going to dig themselves out of this hole? And no, he takes out a gun because he can't take his mistakes anymore and literally blows his head off. Like, and they printed that. DC printed that. That is the last issue of Vigilante in the comics. Now, of course, we have great suicide lines 24/7. Vigilante made the wrong choice. Crazy ass decision to print it. Totally dark character. I've always wondered if Vigilante would return to the darkness. So I am curious if when you decided to play with Vigilante in here, and by the way, again, I commend you, you made an absolutely hilarious sidekick for Peacemaker by having a comedic Vigilante. You went away from where the character was, but I'm just curious if when you were talking with DC of like, you know, I think I'm going to throw in Vigilante. Were they ever like, oh no, we might have plans to launch a serious version? Or were they like, yeah, sure, he just bats around the Arrowverse, take him, do whatever you want?
Well, let me tell you, I didn't know he was in Arrowverse until after the show came out. I didn't even know. Maybe when I looked him up online or something, but like, really, I wish it was more exciting, but I needed a character that was a vigilante character who killed bad guys. And there's only a handful of them in the DCU, in DC. Right. And so I needed to figure out who to use, and Vigilante seemed. And Vigilante was funny to me because his name is Vigilante. His name is what he is. It's,
right.
There's no like Batman or Peacemaker. His name is just like, you know, good guy.
By the way,
his name is basically good guy.
You do the best aesthetic looking version of him. I mean, the Arrowverse, like, you know, I'd seen some pictures of it. I didn't see every episode of it, but like, they did okay with the red, but just for the kids at home, in the comics, at first, he is wearing red ski goggles. Okay. He has the most cheap outfit ever. And like, you gave him like a full visor.
Yeah, he looks pretty cool.
He's
cooler looking than Peacemaker. His costume is way cooler looking than Peacemaker.
It's really Peacemaker's amazing.
Costume is one of the goofiest, but
yeah.
Vigilante looks pretty cool, and it's a little bit more utilitarian. And he's got the reason he has the goggles because he's got eyeglasses, so he needs to have a prescription goggles on. And then I'm like, what kind of guy is a guy who would just go around murdering people he thinks are bad guys? Right. And this is where I ended up.
I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. Well, so, okay. I want to ask a creative habit question and then get into the spoilers. Just tell us about your creative habits for a second. And did they change at all when you were writing, jumping like into television in a way different from your feature writing? I'm guessing you started with a very serious outline. How long did your outlining phase take you? And we're going to get a little more into it in the spoiler section in a second. But just talk about how long it took to
outline. It's not really like that.
Go to script.
Yeah, I used to outline like insanely, like down to the beat. Not used to, but I did for one movie, maybe a couple movies. But I don't do that. What I do is I really build like a world. So I build everything out, and I figure out then major plot points I need to get to. And then I pretty much have fun going from one plot point to the next plot point. So I figured out basically what was going to happen throughout. And along the way, I played with a lot of different ideas. I knew the beginning. I knew the ending from the very, very beginning. And then I just kind of worked towards that and what was going to happen and thematically keeping it on point in terms of Chris and who he was and you know, Leota and who she was, et cetera. So I really build out the world. And then while I'm doing that, I'm also coming up with tons of ideas for scenes. And so I write down tons of little scenes with dialogue stretches and all sorts of stuff, some of which I'm able to work into the series. I'm trying to think of something that was like that, you know? I mean, I think that...
Did you put them on cards or was it like a Microsoft Word document?
Microsoft Word document, okay. And on pieces of paper and on my notes on my phone. You know, I write everything everywhere. I'm sure I lose most of it, you know, but keep it in my brain.
How long was that period for Peacemaker?
Well, not very long because I think I started writing it pretty early, but I think I can't remember how long it was from the time that I told Peter Safran that I would like to do Peacemaker to the time I started writing it. I do know that I think I wrote 5.5 episodes before I was hired.
Well, yeah, you were ready to go there. That's
awesome. I knew it was probably going to happen. You know, I knew it was probably going to happen. So
yeah.
It was really, but there was a moment there where I thought it wasn't going to happen and I had written 5.5 episodes.
That's amazing. One last non-spoiler question. When you sit down to write, how many hours a day do you give yourself or do you give yourself a page count to hit?
I usually sometimes I don't give myself anything. My problem in life is my default is work. So when I'm not actively doing something else, like trying to sleep, which I don't do very well, or, you know, watching TV or playing a game with Jen or something, my default is to work. So I just kind of work by default. And that may not be a healthy thing. And it's something I'm actually trying to work with a little bit, but I'm working on.
Which, getting more sleep or toning down?
Well, sleep I'm really working on. But I think trying to relax and do things other than work all the time.
Sure. Let your mind wander. All right. Well, we're going to get into the spoilers. So podcast listeners and iTunes and Spotify and Backstory Magazine folks watching the YouTube page, if you have not yet seen all of Peacemaker, we are getting into the spoilers, including the finale. So press pause, go to HBO Max, watch Peacemaker, come back. You know, one of the things I want to say that like was a funny transference here. You bring in the White Dragon as his father and, you know, you make him exactly the piece of garbage we expect. You give Peacemaker a great backstory with his brother, but you had this funny, like, this echo of Polka Dot Man being haunted by his mother. And here, even after Peacemaker is able to kill his father, he still is haunted by the ghost of his father.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of that kind of lineage going on back and forth between these two movies set in the same universe? Or was it more...
No, I never thought about it until just now, to be frank with you. But I think that, you know, really what Polka Dot, what it is for me is that Peacemaker, he's killed his father, but his father lives on in him. He's still there dictating. That voice is still in Peacemaker, telling him he's a piece of shit, telling him terrible things about the world, hating on himself. And that voice is going to stay with Peacemaker for some time to come.
Just briefly, everybody skips through opening title sequences. I know that there's been a lot of chatter about this, but I just want to hear it from the horse's mouth. The decision to have that amazing dance in the beginning of every single episode, I couldn't ever press skip. I mean, you just have to watch it. I love it. What inspired that idea? Because it's so fantastic.
I just really wanted something at the very beginning of the show that was fun. And I knew that there were going to be no rules on the show. And I didn't think there was a place for an actual dance sequence within the actual story. So I just thought I would, you know, go outside of the realm of the universe of the show into the titles themselves and do the dance sequence there. But I also think it's a way of saying, you know, any expectations you have, set them aside. This is, we're creatively, there's no, it's not only sex and violence and all the basic things that you think, you know, are, you know, have no boundaries. It's also the creative content of the show.
Ooh, hey, I'm jumping in really quick to remind you to check out Backstory Magazine and support independent journalism. You could read us on a desktop or laptop or via our iPad app, Backstory. And you know, if you've never read us before, you could check out our free issue. And of course, we just published our amazing winter issue, our Dune issue, and you could see the table of contents and some excerpts on our site as well. And, you know, if you want to become a subscriber, I'm here to sweeten the deal. You could use discount coupon code SAVE5. That'll save you $5 off a one-year subscription to Backstory Magazine. And look, I'm here to sweeten the deal, so feel free to use coupon code SAVE5. That will save you $5 off a one-year subscription to Backstory Magazine and give you access to our previous few years in our archive as well. Look, it would really mean a lot to me to have my podcast listeners in iTunes and Spotify and have my YouTube watchers on the Backstory Magazine YouTube page support my passion project. So thanks for considering becoming a subscriber. But now, without any further ado, let's jump right back into our chat with writer-director James Gunn about Peacemaker Season 1. Again, you know, transference between the two shows, and I'm glad that you didn't, you know, stay away from this because this was such a fun story, but, you know, you had the starfish in The Suicide Squad, and you had, over here, you had the butterflies, you know, taking over people's brains, and you're doing this great, you know, invasion of the body snatchers from the 70s look. People point and have their mouth open a few times screaming, just like the show. When they see a human, which was beautiful. And I was glad that that you didn't shy away from another alien invasion story because it has big stakes without the world's going to blow up. And you're also kind of getting a interesting political message in there in the end, which is totally welcomed and appreciated about how they fled their planet. And, you know, basically they think that they could trust Peacemaker because they know he strives for peace and they want him to help save the cow, which is giving them their sustenance, then he was going to blow up. And after this great speech about why he should help them and why, you know, he could still save Earth, which is going down the same path as the butterfly aliens tell him that they were going down. He just thinks about it. And he totally just shoots her. And you know, he destroys the cow. And you know, it's like he's not seeing that essence of, wow, you could save humanity from ourselves. Now,
I think he's seeing it. I think he's seeing it very much. I think that the story of Peacemaker, and the most important story in Peacemaker, and the core of Peacemaker, is about a guy who is trapped inside of his ideals. And his ideals have ruled his life. And he is an idealist first and a human being second. And when he suffered trauma through his father and the death of his brother, he reacted into the meaninglessness of death, which is a part of our lives. He tried to control life by these insane vow and these ideals of how he was going to make that death mean something to the world. and how he was going to be a certain person that also is tied up in his relationship to his father and pleasing his father. And because of that, he has done things that have killed him spiritually. When he kills Rick Flag in the Suicide Squad, Rick is one of his heroes. He loves Rick Flag, and he kills him, and it destroys his soul. Peacemaker returns to the United States, and he's a beaten man. He's a defeated man because his ideals are killing him. And at the end of the show, he has formed connections with other human beings, truly, for the first time. And at the end of the show, he acknowledges his connections to other human beings, perhaps at the cost of destroying the world. And it is the riskiest thing I think I've ever done in anything, is that ending. And it's scary. Well,
it's funny because you're setting it up a lot. You know, in episode 3, Abadayo says, "Why is it everyone thinks climate change is a hoax, also thinks pro wrestling is real?" So, you know, we had that concept coming.
Yeah, well, we knew that they were, that's part of whom they're taking over, are those
right.
the people that believe that stuff. And I, you know, I'm afraid of the episode coming out because I don't want people to be thinking that, oh, he should kill these people that are, you know, there's natural rights and there's being a utilitarian, and Peacemaker is caught between those philosophies. But at the end of the day, he's never acknowledged who he is as a human being. And so we're stuck in the end with an interesting situation, which is about a person who becomes a better human being perhaps making the wrong choice. Perhaps.
Well, I mean, it's funny because when they're talking at the hospital again with Abadayo, she says, you know, was this just your, I think she says your fascistic.
Yeah, your libertarian proto-fascist ideals of freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. At play. And you also get the sense that he just wants humanity to work it out themselves rather than have aliens do it.
I think that's the out Adebayo gives him. I think Adebayo gives him the out and says,
right,
you saved us, maybe, but I don't think Peacemaker thinks anything like that. I think he believes everything Goff is saying, but he is not willing to betray. I get moved just thinking about it because it is so different for him, but he's not willing to betray Adebayo and Harcourt and Economos and maybe to a lesser degree Vigilante.
Well, so, he was
I think it was Vigilante. He might have been like, okay.
Well, he was convinced that they were going to all die if the cow lived. And I wasn't right. Because what was
I think that they've killed everyone who's known who they are and gotten in their way. And they only trust Peacemaker, and he's seen that. So
I wanted to make sure that was clear. But I mean, it is clear when you think about it. So the other funniest thing, I knew the whole time, like, because you bring up so many other DC characters. And I'm like, could they get a cameo? Is something going to happen? I'm like, maybe they'll get a glove. Maybe Batman's glove will be somewhere and you'll hear, like, you know, Will Arnett or a voice, you know, somebody off screen. But when Aquaman and Flash and Wonder Woman and Batman show up and you actually have the actors for Aquaman and Flash, that was fantastic. At what point did you know that was something that was going to happen?
The beginning, the very beginning. I knew that I did not know that Warner Brothers was going to agree to it.
Yeah.
And they did, and then they kind of got scared about it after we shot it. But I'm really happy to HBO Max and backing me up so hard with keeping scene in there.
People are gonna love it when it comes out, and it was so great to see.
Also, I gotta say, Jason and Ezra both were just awesome to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, we were like, he makes fun of you the whole time. Jason was like, you know. Yes, he claims throughout the entire show that you fucked fish, and he just starts laughing. So he was great. James Wan was great because I made sure he was okay with it. Because I didn't want to like be upsetting those guys, and they were, everybody was just completely game. It was awesome.
I think what people really like about your work that you're so good at, aside from just ensemble writing, which you really have a knack for, in which every character has a rich voice. And I want to talk about that for a second. Do you do character specific drafts? Like after your story is roughed out, do you go back and say, I am only going to focus on Harcourt in this past, and I'm going to make sure that her voice is right. And then I'm going to go back and I'm going to only focus on Myrn, you know, stuff like that.
You're pretending that I had time to do a second pass of any of these scripts, Jeff.
Right.
That was pretty quick. I mean, I don't think that if I feel in the moment like they're not working out, I back up and say, what is it about this character? Yeah, to me, it doesn't work like that. Everything they do affects everything else. So if I'm writing it through and I feel like a character is not authentic, then they're going to fuck up the whole rest of the story. So no, I don't. If I feel like there's a character whose voice isn't real or truly themselves, and I back up until I can find it, or I cut that character, which I do sometimes.
Interesting. You know? Well, I mean, I think this is the way to nail that, though, because this is the most honestly purely you type of thing that only you could have written. I think, I mean, for ensemble writing, you are doing setup and payoff for like minimum the first three episodes about John's beard and how he's being bullied about it. But the fact that it becomes this, like, you know, cliffhanger moment when the aliens are asking him what's the strangest thing that he's learned about his human, and the whole team's listening, and he has to have this emotional speech about how he admits that he's dying his beard, even though he's fought vehemently against it the whole time. It's just such a great part of like that team dynamic where somebody else could steal the scene for a minute. Everyone else is listening. And it's just such a silly joke that you strung out literally over 4 hours of previous content just to get to that one moment. Talk about setup and payoff. When did you realize that that was going to be this culminating moment for, you know, him trying to sneak in with the helmet?
I don't know. It was pretty early on, because I think I wrote the section long before I got to the episode. But John Economos' beard was dyed. I made his beard dyed in Suicide Squad. So Steve Agee had to walk around with a shitty dyed beard for all those months in Atlanta and Panama while we were shooting this show. And then to make it a plot point when we came back and he got this opportunity to be in the show was something. But I didn't, I would have kept him calling him dyed beard without that payoff. But I think that was sort of something that I found early on where, you know, something
but
that
it's
you
not
think
just
of
a reference. I really want to point it out again. You didn't just do a one-liner joke. This is a stop the movie moment.
Yeah.
Where he is talking about how he would not dye his roots properly.
Yeah.
Like he is going into the weeds on this. And you literally wrote a monologue about dyeing his beard.
Well, I think he has to look at himself objectively for a moment. And he knows in that moment his back is against the wall. And the only way that he's going to get out of it is by being completely authentic and saying, you know, if he starts to go, oh, I don't dye my beard, he's going to get killed.
Right.
So he needs to say the truth about why does he dye his beard as if he is an alien inhabiting that body. And props to Steve Agee, too, because he's amazing in that scene.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who's been a comedic actor for a long time and had to do this dramatic scene. And then also how it affects Chris is really important, too, because he feels, you know, he feels bad. He sees how he's such a dick to have been bringing that up when there's so much humanity behind this choice to dye his beard because girls don't like him.
I mean, it's just a great scene. And like, it's just something that I found very inherent in your work is taking these small, quirky moments and really magnifying them. And audiences are there for it, man. Like I absolutely love it. Let's talk about that ending moment with the butterfly, though. Goth shows up on his porch. Now he's pouring out what might be the last of the food on Earth. That might be the last of the food on Earth for Goth. But what does that mean to you of like letting Goth live even after he killed the cow and essentially supposedly killing off the alien race?
I think he loves Goth. You know, I think he Goth is like, you know, Goth became a pet to him. And more so, I think Goth loves Peacemaker. I mean, you know, we can see, you know, through, and by the way, Annie Chang's, her performance is Song/Goth is less to none in the whole season. She's incredible. She had auditioned for two characters in her audition.
Wow.
And there were many actors who could do one or many actors who could do the other, but she was the one person who was able to do both so tremendously well. And to bring that emotion to that last scene as this bug character, who, you know, even among bug characters is not a very emotional person, but who does love Peacemaker, who's fallen in love with Peacemaker, I think to some degree, is really amazing. And I think Peacemaker knows that he has that connection with her. He knows when he shoots her in the chest and not the head that he's not killing Goff.
Right.
He's just stopping Goff.
That makes sense. Well, so what was your toughest scene as a writer and as a director? What was the scene on the page that you found yourself coming back to over and over again? And how did you creatively rise to the challenge? And then when you directed?
The only one I really worked hard on was episode 8 because it was so complicated. And there used to be a more complicated way of Eagly fucking everything up in the middle of the show. That was much, much more of a mess. And it just got to be too complicated in a way that wasn't fun. So the last episode in general was the only one that was, I think, hard to write. I was actually episode 5 with the gorilla stuff was kind of, you know, it was outside of everything else. So that was a little bit difficult. And then, directing the scene that I'm still not that happy with is the scene with the helmets on the log. And that there's just some messy stuff in that scene. You know?
Really? That scene was so smooth.
I mean, it's always glad you think that, because it was really fucking pain in the ass to shoot it. And I had to shoot, you know, I replaced an actor. So it's like,
right.
I had to shoot it twice, you know?
But it's just funny because that scene is just comedy. Like, it's just a silly comedy scene, and it's so smooth. So it's just funny that, but I thought you were going to say the invasion of the barn, because it's so complicated and it looked beautiful.
No, the invasion of the barn was simple in comparison. The one that was the most complicated, and one of the reasons why I thought I needed to direct I wasn't originally going to direct episode 6, but I ended up directing episode 6, was the choreography of the trailer as they climb into the tree and Song going around the back of the trailer and trying to explain where everybody was in terms of placement.
Yeah.
And as a director, I feel like one of the things I'm better at is really figuring out how to show where everyone is in a comfortable way that doesn't confuse people. And that to me is an incredibly complicated scene. And the other one that was incredibly complicated, not because it was complicated to know what they were doing, but because of the way it was built, was in episode 2 when he's jumping down from one balcony to the other. Because that was a combination of an actual building, an extension of a building that we had to build on set, a single apartment with one porch off of it. And so I had to design that scene in a way ahead of time where we knew every piece was. And that was, it was so incredibly boring to storyboard that I was afraid it was going to be boring on film. And I don't think it is at all. Whereas something like Eagly kicking people's asses in episode 6 was really fun to storyboard. And because it's actually kind of simple.
Look, man, I love the show. You did a fantastic job. Season 2 has not been announced yet. I hope there is an announcement in our future for a season 2, because I think all the fans will be all for it as well. And I can't wait to see what you're doing with Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So we shall chat again, my friend, but thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jeff, man. I appreciate it. It's great to see you again, dude.
And that's how the Q&A went down. Special thanks again to writer-director James Gunn for being so generous with his time and coming down to chat about Peacemaker Season 1 on HBO Max. And folks, while you're surfing around online, I hope you also check out Backstory Magazine over at backstory.net. You know, you can read us on a desktop or laptop or via our iPad app, Backstory. And, you know, we recently published our Dune issue, our winter issue, and you can explore the table of contents on our site. And if you've never read us before, I hope you check out our free issue. And if you like what you see in the free issue, I hope you'll consider becoming a subscriber. And when you do, I'm happy to offer you discount coupon code SAVE5. It'll save you $5 off a 1-year subscription to Backstory Magazine, and it'll give you access to our archives. You could thumb through the last few years as well. Look, it would really mean a lot to me to have my podcast listeners and iTunes and Spotify and my YouTube watchers of the Backstory Magazine YouTube page support my passion project. So thanks for considering becoming a subscriber. The Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith podcast is a copyright of Unlikely Films Incorporated in 2022. All rights reserved. Folks, if you want to reach out to me on social media, you could find me as Yo Goldsmith on Twitter or Backstory_Mag on Twitter, or Yo Goldsmith on Instagram or Backstory_Mag on Instagram. You could also drop me an email at backstoryletters@gmail.com. That inbox gets a little clogged sometimes, but I love hearing from y'all and I try to respond as often as I can. I'm Jeff Goldsmith, the publisher of Backstory Magazine and the host of the Q&A, thanking you for tuning in and telling you to stay out of trouble. Till next week.